Thanks, Don. That actually kind of wraps up our agenda as printed, but before we move on and adjourn for the day, there's a couple things that I'd like to address. Number one, there's been a continued pattern by an individual challenging the transparency and the legality of the way we conduct our meetings. And so I just want to put it on the record that our department throughout COVID, I think, led the charge and deserves a gold star for the way that we've opened up access to these meetings. There was no mandate that said we had to have listening posts in Pier and Rapid City and Sioux Falls, Watertown, throughout these proceedings. We've done everything way above the bar as far as that. And so staff should be complimented for the effort that we go through. We brought in South Dakota Public Television to broadcast these things live well before it was mandated, and it isn't part of the mandate. And to constantly challenge the fact that we try to be transparent and try to look at the hundreds and hundreds of comments that are put online, I don't hear from other individuals that are having trouble downloading multiple page PDFs. May be a challenge, so that might be something that we have to work through, but it's a bit disingenuous to continually prod this department on our transparency and the efforts that we went through to open up access to the public. I don't know that there's another border commission under the state flag that puts the effort that we do into it, so I wanted to once again commend the staff and the folks behind the scenes, even our partners at South Dakota Public Television, for working with us on that. And another item brought up was the fact that there was discussion on a non-agenda item about beavers in the Black Hills, and that was promised to be put on the September agenda. Unfortunately, I wasn't at that meeting, so I don't know about any promises, but once I saw the level of interest that was involved with beavers and a plan to be put in order for that, I asked the secretary, Commissioner Beads, and I and other staff have worked behind the scenes. We've had several meetings on that issue, and I didn't want it put on the agenda and rushed. I want to make sure that we do something right. What we've found through our working group that we put together on that is that we plan to have some sort of an update and action plan by our November meeting. The only thing that happens fast is an accident, and this is a serious issue, and we want to take it serious. We've seen the amount of public input and media coverage on this. It's something that's important to the department. Obviously, Commissioner Bees is closer to the subject than a lot of folks out here, and I'll give him the opportunity to address that in just a second. But what we're going to talk about there's certain things that happen in between printing an agenda and giving public notice that we feel is important. And at every meeting we ask is a wrap-up of the proceedings to ask commissioners for subject matters that they'd like to see us delve into, have more research or reports on, and we're going to do that again at the end of this meeting. But there's a couple things that I'd like to ask Director Simpson to address. There's low waters, and we've been working behind the scenes on addressing access issues. There's a lot of boats on our lakes in South Dakota that, due to the low level, we're running into some real problems getting boats off the water. And so, Scott, I'm going to ask you just to give us a little update on that, if you would. And then we're going to talk about, Andy's going to talk about EHD. We've got some really troubling data in recent days and hours on EHD, and that's an important subject to the state of South Dakota and our outdoorsmen and women, and so we want to address that, and then I'll come back to the action items for any other commissioners too. But why don't Commissioner Bees, if you had anything that you wanted to add on the beaver subject that we're working on, feel free at this time to do that.
Yeah, Commissioner Bees here. When I brought this up here at the last meeting, I didn't think we'd have the response from the public that I've had. I mean, people out here have come up to me and really want the department to look into this. I believe the Forest Service has even, there's been comments from their biologists that they would like to see this addressed. So as Commissioner Olson said, we wanted to take our time and make sure we got some good information before we brought it to a meeting, and I think that's the right course in our talks we've had. So we are looking at it, and we'll address it in November.
Thank you. Anything, Secretary Roebling, you want to add on the beaver or anything? We're good there. All right. Director Simpson, if you wouldn't mind, just come up. And I think that it's, we've had some really good media coverage of these low water issues, getting people's water craft off the lakes safely. I think everybody, myself included, is kind of holding out for this weekend to get one last little splash in before we winterize and put things away for the year. But it really is an issue in a lot of the lakes in eastern South Dakota that have permanent slips on the lake, and then they use our access points to take those boats off. And so maybe you could just address what we've been doing and what the plan going forward is.
Yeah, appreciate that, Chairman Olson. Scott Simpson, Director of the Parks and Recreation Division. Yeah, in general, we've got low water conditions throughout a lot of eastern South Dakota, a lot of western South Dakota. In general, we have some real challenges at boat ramps, in particular, East River. A lot of those lakes are dishbowl lakes. We can't get far enough out to find the depths that we need to both launch and remove boats from lakes. It's a challenge, and we're trying to address it as best we can. If there's an opportunity for us to make some adjustments to find a little bit deeper water, we'll do that. But it's, a lot of it is just informing people of the situation that we've got, because we don't have an obvious solution to some of these low water challenges. It isn't just extending a boat ramp out, because you can't go out 70 yards into the water to find 6 more inches of depth. And we've got, that's an exaggeration, but that is the kind of scenario that we kind of run into. It really is a lot of just educating folks and saying, hey, you have to be careful. You can't maybe power load your boat the way that you normally do, because we've only got 2.5 feet of depth where normally we would have 4, 5, 6 feet. We're putting up some signs at some of these launches. In particular, the one over in Madison, we know we've got an obvious issue there. We've got our engineers out there looking. What I would say is probably the most knowledgeable boat ramp person in the state works for us. Greg Ogden has been to every place in the state, I think. He's got data on just about every boat ramp that we've got. We sent him over there to see if he could figure out a solution. It looks like we've got challenges over there, and I don't know if Greg's going to be able to, wave a magic wand in Madison, but, we're doing the best that we can, but the biggest thing is that we just have to educate people, and they need to be really careful, bringing their boats out of the water and launching. They need to be really careful navigating their boats in some instances. This low water, both East and West River, all of a sudden things are starting to poke out of the water, or maybe just submerged underneath the water. And, our folks, we can't drop a buoy on everything that might damage your boat. This is a great big state. And people have just got to be careful. And that's, just take some personal responsibility for how you're using your boat, whether or not you're familiar with an area. If you're not familiar, use some slower speeds, check things out, those kinds of things. But, hopefully these rains are going to cure some of these problems. I don't think it's going to fix everything, but if we start to run a little water, some of these smaller lakes do start to fill up fairly fast. And, even a change of 6 inches in some of these water, some of these lakes, if we can get 6 more inches of depth, that makes a lot of difference when we're loading and unloading boats. So we'll continue that effort. We're going to keep our fingers crossed for a little snow this winter and hopefully find some depth in some of these lakes. And those places where we know we have issues, we're going to continue to try to find solutions so that the next time we go through low water periods of time, which we know we will, maybe we won't have some of the same issues.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. Appreciate that. Andrew, if you wouldn't mind, I'll put you on the spot here, and we'll give us a little update on what you're hearing out there on EHD and next steps.
Thank you. All right. Good afternoon, Chair Olson, Commissioner Secretary Roebling. Or good morning. Andrew Norton here, senior big game biologist at Game Fishing Park. Just going to give you a quick update on hemorrhagic disease. So here's the timeline, but first give a little background on hemorrhagic disease, also known as blue tongue. There's different variants of it, but more commonly, many people refer to it as blue tongue, but epizootic hemorrhagic disease is a different version of it, and it kills deer the same way. Simply, it can be thought of similar to winter kill, where you get a one-off event that's caused by drought, biting midges, a vector, and we get these big die-offs, but they occur and then they're done the next year. So it's very different than chronic wasting disease, which is something that persists and just continues to get worse and worse. So this is, we'll get a big die-off, as you can see on this timeline here. In 2012, most folks in the state might remember that we had severe drought that year and saw big die-offs across much of the state. That resulted in probably significantly reduced deer populations in a lot of hunting units, and what we did there was we offered folks the opportunity to return tags and try to limit the amount of doe harvest for that upcoming fall. And subsequent falls after that as well, we reduced doe tags to try to grow the population. You can see there's been a few years here in 2016 as well. We noticed a fairly significant die-off. But most of these other years, we see little blips, and it's kind of geographically isolated where we might only take action in a few areas as opposed to across the whole state. 2020 was a great example, east of the river. There was some significant die-offs, and that kind of coincided with areas we wanted more deer. So we did offer the opportunity to return tags in addition to what we talked about earlier, being a COVID year, people could return tags. And we also decided not to redistribute some of those tags because, again, wanted to save some does. So what are we seeing? Just want to give you an example of last year and then this year compared to last year. Because this disease usually starts in late July, August, but then runs through maybe even October till the first killing frost when these midges or no-see-ums die, we see this mortality well into the hunting season. So just like the discussion yesterday with elk tags, you kind of have to be responsive at the last minute here if we want to do something with these deer hunting licenses during the deer season. So last year, like I said, east of the river, there was a fair amount of cases. You can see these black dots up here. Those are reported mortalities. Could probably assume that most of those are EHD related. Fortunately, we've got a lot of radio collared deer as well. So these green dots are radio collared deer mortalities during the same time. And likewise, a lot of those could be assumed to be EHD related. However, you can see in the southwest part of the state there's no overlapping hemorrhagic disease that was reported, so it's very likely those mortalities are probably some other cause. In the northwest part, BAU1, which would be Harding, Perkins, and Corson County, we have GPS collars. There we have a lot more information, and we can actually determine cause-specific mortality. And we go in and we cut the spleen out, and we can confirm that these deer indeed did die of EHD. So I'll get into that in the next slide here, what we're looking at. In 2021, obviously, like I said, this disease is only going to end after the first frost, so we've still got a ways to go, unfortunately, but it is popping up. Importantly to note, you see there's really few cases of reported mortality from the public. Not many hunters are out there yet, but because we're fortunate enough to have those GPS collars here in the northwest part of the state, the last 3 weeks, staff almost every day have been going up north, collecting a spleen sample, and almost all of those are coming back positive for EHD. So seeing fairly high number of mortalities up there. Again, just to try to put this in perspective compared to last year, this is just DAU1 for those northwest three counties of the state. The top figure is going to be juveniles. Those are going to be deer that just had their first birthday this last spring. The bottom figure is going to be adult females, so anything older than just over a year. And what this is a survival curve. You can basically think of it that zero is going to be July 1, and as you go to the right, those are days since July 1, so it goes all the way through about mid-October. The red line is going to be last year, so you can see that goes the whole way, whereas the blue line doesn't go the whole way because we're not through the year yet. And each step down represents one of our radio collared deer dying. So we've got about maybe 100 collared in some of these examples, so each step down would be 1% of that sample that dies. And then you can estimate a survival rate from that. So you can see it doesn't affect the juveniles maybe as much. they're stepping down last year to about a little bit over 90%. However, the adult does, which are the really important cohort, those survival rates are below 85% last year. I guess the big concerning thing is if you look at that trajectory this year, it started about 30 days before it did last year, and we're already approaching 90% on the adult dose. In fact, we've had three mortalities in the last day and a half come in on white-tailed deer in Harding County, so that blue line on the bottom would actually have dipped below 90% already. So obviously some things can change. These midges, we don't know exactly how they work, so they might not continue the same, but really what we're looking for is the first hard frost to stop this. One thing I do want to point out, this is most likely occurring in whitetails only. We see it a little bit in mule deer, but this is just the same curves for our mule deer that are GPS collared up north, and much, much lower mortality rate. So fortunately, the deer population we really want to go up there isn't seeing as significant of a dial. Pronghorn it affects, but very minor effects on those as well. With that, take any questions?
Thanks, Andrew. Does anybody have any questions for Andrew? Commissioner Beast, is what rate does the department need to step in and start asking for tags back? Or what is our option if people aren't turning their tags in, what action can the department do to maybe recall tags back?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Beast, good question. So we have a couple options available to us, and I'll first back up a little bit. We've had discussions internally about the situation of EHD and what we're seeing and hearing from the public right now. We don't want to overreact, but we don't want to wait too long to react also, right? So what we are doing is we're giving it here this first week or two, in particular of September. As Andrew just stated, with hunting season beginning now, we're going to have more people out on the ground to help us ascertain, are we seeing mortalities or finding mortalities in other areas than what we've already confirmed or have identified. But with that information, then some of the options we have, like we have done in previous years, number one, we can put a statement out there asking for people to voluntarily turn in their tag, and we'll reimburse them fully, reinstate preference points, those things. In particular, in areas where we know that we're having a lot of reports coming in and confirmation of PHD. Another option that is available to the department and the commission via administrative rule that we can go in right now and remove any leftover licenses that exist in units that we would believe would make sense to pull those tags. I mean, that's a conversation is directed right now between the Secretary of the Department, and if we bring forward that recommendation, have that conversation with the Chair of the Commission, we can go ahead and take that action. That's an administrative rule, and where we are with the drawing process right now, we'd have that ability to do that. So I guess what I would offer to you is, number one, we want to make the public aware of what we know right now and what we're hearing and what we're seeing. Get them to be more vigilant to let us know if they're finding mortalities out there, regardless if it's in the Northwest, central part of the state, or southeast. We don't care. We want to know about it. As we collect that data and information right now, then we'll make those decisions of, do we pull any leftover licenses? Do we start encouraging people to talk to the people where they hunt? Again, no different than pheasant hunting. Deer hunting is the same way. We want those people to be talking to the local people that know and see what's happening right there on the ground, and let them make that decision if they want to turn in that license because of what they're seeing and hearing. And we'll start getting the word out to folks that this is happening. We have already. We're encouraging people to notify us, contact conservation officers, wildlife damage specialists, any department staff of any mortalities that they're finding. So I would say over the next 2 weeks here, we're going to be making some decisions of actions that we would take. We'll keep you informed of what we're learning and what considerations that we have in the hopper to move forward to address this.
Any other questions for Tom or Andrew? Yeah, thanks for putting that together on short notice. We appreciate that. It's important to suggest that we all reach out to our friends in the hunting community and start to ask more and more about reports. A guy that reported one to me, I sent in last week from over in Moody County, and laying along the banks of the Big Sioux and the 3-year-old healthy deer. half eaten by coyotes, so I don't know that it was PhD and we couldn't get there to you know, do any testing on it because it was already too far gone, but people got to be vigilant to help police this for us. Thank you. With that, I would open it up. Is there any action items or areas of study that the commissioners would like to see in the next month or two that they have the staff bring forward? And you're hearing out there, or you'd like to have studies? If you do, you can always email me or Mitchell or the secretary, that's fine as well. With that, Mr. Secretary, I'll give you the final word before we open.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, commissioners, for a great meeting. Just wanted to say thank you to the staff. You always do a phenomenal job, and can't thank you enough for that. The presentations are always excellent, and we cover a lot of great information. Again, if there's other information that you'd like us to cover in the upcoming meetings, just please reach out to us, and we'll be happy to get that on the agenda. This has been a great meeting, some great discussion, and it's fall, and it's time to go hunting. So everybody enjoy the fall and get outdoors, and we can't say that enough. So my favorite time of year, and the weather is starting to feel like it, and I hope folks get outside and enjoy the great outdoors. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that is all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Final word from anyone before we adjourn?
For open marketing, 34 by Tom,
all right, look forward to seeing everybody in Deadwood in October. I would say that it's already in the October meeting time, but I look forward to seeing everybody on Deadwood. And with that, I will declare the meeting adjourned.